Mending Asian Fences.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. It's been years since the leaders of Japan and China got together for a sit-down. The two countries don't like each other very much. The Chinese in particular hold a grudge about a brutal Japanese invasion in 1937. But this weekend, Japan's new Prime Minister Shinzo Abe arrives in China to try to make some amends. Jocelyn Ford reports from Beijing.
Chinese leaders had refused to hold summits with Japan's outgoing Prime Minister Junichiro Koizumi because he'd insisted on visiting a shrine where Japanese war criminals are honored. The visit this Sunday signals the new Prime Minister Shinzo Abe intends to overcome old animosities. Political analyst Robert Broadfoot.
Japan has already sent out the message that its days of sitting on the sidelines in Asia are over. It's going to be more aggressive at pursuing Japan's national interests.
In the case of China, that could mean cooperating on energy security, for example, by jointly exploring for oil. But top of the agenda this weekend is likely to be how to convince North Korea to abandon its nuclear weapons ambitions. In Beijing, I'm Jocelyn Ford for Marketplace.
Investors are piling on Wall Street's rally. The Dow hit a new closing high for the third straight day. It gained 16 points, about a tenth, to wind up at 11,866. The NASDAQ put on two-thirds to close at 2306. The S&P 500 added two-tenths of a percent. Oil's holding at about $60 a barrel today. Time to raise an Orange Julius, I guess, to the indoor shopping mall. That great American icon turns 50 this weekend. Minnesota Public Radio's Tony Randolph takes us back a half century.
When Southdale opened just south of Minneapolis in October of 1956, it was a huge event. St. Olaf College history professor James Farrell says Southdale was the prototype for the modern mall.
And I would argue that it's the most important mall ever built, because every mall after Southdale in 1956 is just basically variations on a theme of Southdale, because there were lots of problems with malls that Southdale solved, and then everybody just sort of picked up those kinds of innovations.
Those problems, Farrell said, included climate, control of the interior space, and multiple stories. He says surveys showed that at the time, only 1 in 3 days in Minnesota were the sort of days that people wanted to walk outside between shops, which is what they had to do before Southdale. Today, there are more than 1,000 indoor malls in the U.S., and business is booming. Last year, malls and other shopping centers employed more than 12 million people and generated more than $2 trillion in sales. I'm Tony Randolph for Marketplace.
There really isn't a Starbucks on every corner. I mean, that's just hyperbole. I think someone forgot to tell the company, though. Starbucks just revealed its long-term business plan, and it wants to triple the number of Starbucks in the world. Right now, there are 12,000. The goal is 40,000. That's more locations than McDonald's has. This is Marketplace. Around the country this morning, in New Orleans, the coffee shops, restaurants, and bars are still struggling with a much smaller customer base. A door-to-door survey puts the Orleans parish population at about 190,000. That's only 41% of what it was before Katrina. With flu season coming up, Minnesota just launched a new inspection program for flu shot clinics. That is, clinics outside a medical setting, in stores and pharmacies, for example. Those that agree to an inspection can display a state seal of approval. The program stems from a flu shot scam a couple years ago. A nurse was giving watered-down doses at a Minneapolis college. A power play in Pittsburgh. Canadian businessman Jim Basile has agreed to buy the city's National Hockey League team, the Penguins, for $175 million. Basile is co-CEO of Research in Motion. That's the company that makes the BlackBerry. The Morning Report comes to you from American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Fellows. Millions of businesses worldwide choose Fellow shredders for their shredding needs. Fellows, the world's toughest shredders. More at Fellows.com. By Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by The Economist magazine, which not only tells what's happening each week, but why. The Economist, at newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow. You know the old saying, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. But what do you do when life gives you lava? When a massive volcano erupted in 2002, people in a little African town in Congo got a whole lot of lava. You're not going to believe what they're doing with it now. Suzanne Marmion reports.
Mount Nyiragongo still looms above the town of Goma, its head lost in a smoky haze. At night, the gray cloud glows an ominous shade of red. When it erupted 4 years ago, the volcano killed as many as 100 people and displaced 500,000. Local journalist Jack Kahurha was here when the lava engulfed the town. Driving through the once devastated town, he points out the place where the police station once stood. Impounded cars were locked behind a high fence.
But all the cars and buildings were taken away by lava.
Still, Kahurha says when the molten rock stopped coming, it wasn't all bad.
This volcanic area is very fertile. You are going to find that beans, vegetables grow, and you can't imagine that this is lava.
Goma also proved to be fertile ground for foreign donors. Countries gave $40 million to help the displaced families. The money sparked a construction boom, and it's lava that they're using to rebuild. Lava walls, lava houses, and even lava gravel to make lava roads. Goma now has some of the best streets in the whole of Congo, a nation where less than 2% of the roads are paved.
These are made by women who are jobless. They spend the whole day collecting stones and pounding them.
In a lava field nearby, the black stones are sharp as glass. Women chip away at the frozen Black Sea. Pelagie Nyabade says that before the volcano erupted, she made her living herding goats. But when everybody had to flee, looters came and stole her animals. She says her life became difficult. She had to live off whatever she could get from begging. But then she heard about the lava business. She can sell a bucket of the black rocks for $1.50, more than a day's pay in Congo. It's hard work, but she takes pride in it. Jack Kahurha translates for Nyabade as she points to a construction site nearby.
You can see the house which is over there. So the result, everywhere you see, people are building.
Today, the economy is thriving as a hub for mineral trading. Luxury hotels have gone up, and the population is booming. In Goma, Congo, I'm Suzanne Marmion for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The ball looks like a mini soccer ball.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.